page Roman 9, general introduction. Critical theory, the umbrella for a whole spectrum of positions associated with the Frankfurt Institute for Social Research, has finally, after long delay, an opportunity to become an integral part of English-speaking culture, comprised of philosophers, literary critics, sociologists, psychologists, economists, and political scientists, of whom Theodore W. Adorno, Walter Benjamin, Erich Fromm, Max Horkheimer, Otto Kirchheimer, Leo Löwenthal, Herbert Marcuse, Franz Neumann, and Friedrich Pollock are the major figures. The Frankfurt School came into existence in the mid-1920s as an association of left intellectuals that formed the privately funded Institute for Social Research. The concept of critical theory derives from the tradition of Kantian critical philosophy and of Marxian critique of ideology. Kant himself defined his late philosophy as critical and entitled his three greatest works Critiques of Pure Theoretical Reason, of Practical Reason, and of Aesthetic and Teleological Judgment. Critique, in the Kantian sense, is an analysis of the conditions of possibility and the limits of rational faculties undertaken by reason itself, assuming a self-reflective or transcendental posture. Reason analyzes and criticizes itself in the process of its world-constituting legislating activity. For Kant, Newtonian physics and Euclidean geometry constituted the growing achievement of rational synthesis. Page Roman 10. He believed that the logical categorical foundations of these sciences represented the conditions of the possibility of objective experience as such. Basing itself on this interpretation of Kant, there are, of course, others. One wing of Findesiegel, Neo-Kantianism thought to broaden the Kantian meaning of critique by making history cultural and social the primary theme of transcendental or critical self-reflection. From Dilthey and Rickert to Simmel and Max Weber, the implicit and or explicit project of philosophy became a critique of historical reason. To be sure, Kant left to posterity several key essays on history, which examine the limits and possibilities of progress. But, as is evident from this theme, he was deeply swayed by the 18th century way of viewing these problems. The 19th century, however, became an age of the highest conceivable degree of historical experience, learning, research, and reflection, and any new critical philosophy of history had to interpret the works of Ranke, Taine, Michelet, Burckhardt, Troisen, and others. The Hegelian critique of Kant, short of what the neo-Kantians saw as Hegel's speculative panlogical excesses, also had to be integrated. So in an age when natural science enjoyed its highest prestige, one group of primarily German but also French and Italian thinkers systematically attempted to replace nature by culture, science by history as the focus of philosophical concern. An attitude also typical of the early mentors of the Institute members, Hans Cornelius, Martin Heidegger, and Edmund Husserl, as well as of the single most important Marxian influence of the Institute, Georg Lukács. The second main source of critical theory was the Marxian tradition of ideology critique. This critique refers not just to the simple discovery of systematically concealed interests behind theories, but also and even primarily to the explosive confrontation of the true and false dimensions of existing theories of reality as exemplified by Marx's mature critique of political economy. In fact, Marx too used the word critique in the titles or subtitles of at least 8 finished and unfinished works. The Kantian idea of categorical self-reflection and the demonstration of the limits of the science criticized was surely incorporated in Marx's concept. But so was Hegel's objection that Kant assumed the given facility and positivity of existing sciences. Page Roman 11. Accordingly, Marx's oeuvre intended to be both the criticism of science, of classical political economy, and a new critical science, a political economic crisis theory. The actual methodology of Marx's mature critique thus is more deeply rooted in Hegel's phenomenology and philosophy of right than in the Kantian tradition. Given the theoretical sources of critical theory and its Marxian political thrust, it is hardly surprising that its reception in the English-speaking world was not what it would have deserved. Still, critical theory has not been a total stranger to the English-speaking world, at least since the late 1930s. Horkheimer and Adorno spent a crucial period of their lives in the U.S., relocating the institute and the journal Zeitschrift für Sozialforschung, whose last volumes were published in English. Neumann and Kirchheimer spent their last years in the U.S., and their reputations as great teachers influenced some American political scientists. Fromm became a leading member of the American Neo-Freudian school, and also he broke with the Institute. He has never given up the characteristic Frankfurt project of the Marx-Freud synthesis. Löwenthal and Marcuse finally continue the tradition of Frankfurt critical theory in America into the present day, with the latter playing a key role for the theoretically inclined minority of the new left of the 1960s. Nor has the influence of critical theory and academia been totally negligible. During their stays in New York and Los Angeles, Adorno and Horkheimer had a conflict-ridden but perhaps not fruitless relationship with American sociologists, as demonstrated by the volume Mass Culture with articles by Adorno and Löwenthal. That was published much later. Better known is the series of empirical and theoretical projects on the study of prejudice and the authoritarian personality, which brought Adorno and Horkheimer into working contact with a number of scholars, Bruno Bettelheim, Maurice Janowitz, and others, whose intellectual development, however, has since taken different directions. More important were contacts with men like Hans Gert and Benjamin Nelson, who were to convey, in spite of their reservations, something of the content and the spirit of critical theory to future generations of students. In this last respect, the work of such collaborators of the Institute as Marcuse, Neumann, Kirchheimer, Gerhard Meyer, and K.A. Wittfogel probably laid much of the groundwork for the emergence of an American critical social science. Page Roman 12. We should certainly interpret the very positive remarks of C. Wright Mills and the Frankfurt School in this way. Finally, under the impact of the New Left that was submerged in the 1950s and early 1960s, surfaced in the late 1960s and 1970s as a revival of critical theory. So primarily on the level of the history of ideas, first-rate books by Martin J. Trent Schroyer, Bruce Brown, Russell Jacoby, Susan Buck Morse and William Lai's translations of the works of Adorno, Horkheimer, and Benjamin, the success of Marcuse's works, and the emergence of several journals, Telos, New German Critique, Theory, and Society, and so on, that are strongly influenced by critical theory have all created an atmosphere within which the heritage of the Frankfurt School could begin to be fully appropriated. What is still missing, however, is a large-scale reconstruction of this heritage in accordance with the needs of the new political and social situation. In other words, the older, highly selective and limited reception of the Frankfurt School failed to lead to a deep understanding of its theoretical trajectory. The new reception, which fully reconstructs the tradition only in the realm of the history of ideas, has not yet opened the way to new theoretical departures. To speak of critical theory as a systematically elaborated account of social reality, it's possible only at a distance from the subject that tends to blur all significant differences existing among the various members of the Frankfurt School. In fact, close examination reveals that there are at best only critical theorists confronting a common problematic within more or less the same cultural tradition. Yet, discussions of critical theory need not become wanderings into the night in which all cows are black, if the focus is shifted from the particular theoretical tenets whose contradictory multiplicity resists systematization to the odyssey of the problematic itself. Such a trajectory, fully presented by the essential Frankfurt School reader, begins with critical theory's emergence from the first generation of Hegelian Marxists, Lukács and Korsch, moves through its interpretation of Stalinism, fascism, and the New Deal, and its attempt to provide a theory of American society, and closes with its final inability to come to grips with the new state-regulated capitalist social formation. Page Roman 13. This outcome was the result of key theoretical choices made earlier in the effect to revitalize and make historically relevant the Hegelian Marxist tradition without abandoning its general philosophical framework. Thus, to provide a general evaluation of critical theory that does not violate its very spirit, one must first and foremost grasp the particularity and specificity of its problematic without forcibly reconciling internal contradictions, conflicts, and shifts. Simultaneously, one must critically locate its one-sidedness from the privileged vantage point of the present by clarifying the relation between the confused and ambiguous aspects of the theory's formulations and its historical context. Such an account must explain the consciously esoteric thrust of at least the key members of the Institute, their planned failure to have a broad, lasting impact, and the reasons why a different social analysis can avoid the self-contradictions which a more popular presentation of the original critical theory would have precipitated. Though the first generation of critical theorists had literary as well as philosophical aspirations and generally wrote, Adorno and Benjamin especially, with great elegance, incisiveness, and elaborate finesse, American resistance to the easily detected heavy drone of the complicated underlying thought processes endemic to German philosophy appears to have diminished appreciation of their profundity as well as of their intelligence and an ingrained American habit of reading literally missed the metaphoric intent of many of their paradoxically couched formulations. On the level of language, the misreception can perhaps be explained simply and demonstrated in terms of syntax. On the level of meaning, the difficulty resides with what is spelled out in one cultural tradition and what is left unsaid in another. Thus, the fact that critical theory has failed to receive, especially in the English-speaking world, anything close to the cultural reception that would appear to be its due is neither primarily the result of conspiratorial efforts on the part of traditional theorists to ignore